With CarGurus Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and CarGurus Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder CarGurus is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with CarGurus at CarGurus.com. Go to CarGurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's CarGurus.com. CarGurus.com.
Kicking off the heat, yeah, it's time to go. Slapping me, wrestling, stealing the show. Tuesdays, Fridays, we bring it on air. Step into the ring if you're ready to care.
If we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land, we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Freedom and the dignity of the individual have been more available and assured here than in any other place on earth. The price for this freedom at times has been high, but we have never been unwilling to pay that price.
I have a dream. My four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
It is no coincidence that our present troubles parallel and are proportionate to the intervention and intrusion in our lives that result from unnecessary and excessive growth of government. It is time for us to realize that we're too great a nation to limit ourselves to small dreams. We're not, as some would have us believe, doomed to an inevitable decline. I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing. So with all the creative energy at our command, let us begin an era of national renewal. Let us renew our determination, our courage, and our strength. And let us renew our faith and our hope. We have every right to dream heroic dreams. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. You can see heroes every day going in and out of factory gates. Others, a handful in number, produce enough food to feed all of us and then the world beyond.
America is the place where anything can happen. America is the place where anyone can rise. And here, on this land, on this soil, on this continent, the most incredible dreams come true. This nation is our canvas, and this country is our masterpiece. We look at tomorrow and see unlimited frontiers just waiting to be explored. Our brightest discoveries are not yet known. Our most thrilling stories are not yet told. Our grandest journeys are not yet made. The American age, the American epic, the American adventure has only just begun. Our spirit is still young. The sun is still rising. God's grace is still shining. And my fellow Americans, the best is yet to come. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless America. Thank you very much.
What is up, y'all? We are back with another episode of the Slapping Me to Wrestling podcast. I am your host, We Too Deep. And this will be the only episode of the week. There won't be a Friday episode because it is 4th of July and we're going to take the, you know, the holiday off. So I wanted to go ahead and start this show off with a 4th of July tribute, because on Friday, on the 4th of July, we're not just celebrating, you know, a date on a calendar. We're celebrating an idea, a dangerous, radical, breathtaking idea that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. And among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. 249 years later, that idea still echoes through all of our trials, through division, through struggle, through moments of pride and moments of pain. America remains a nation forged in freedom, refined by sacrifice, empowered by the idea that and the belief that the future can be brighter than the past. So today we remember those who gave everything so that we could live free. The soldiers who never came home. The patriots who stood firm when compromise would have been easier. And ordinary Americans who helped build this country brick by brick. We honor their memory, not just with fireworks and flags, but with resolve. The resolve to be good stewards of the fragile experiment in liberty. Freedom isn't inherited. It is defended, preserved, and passed down. And every generation must choose to carry that torch. We are far from a perfect nation. We've never been perfect. But find me a perfect nation. Because we are a people who refuse to settle for less than the ideals that we were founded on. We fight, we rise, we debate, we dream. That's America. And that is worth celebrating. So on Friday, whether you're lighting fireworks or sitting in silence, take a moment. Look around. Breathe in that freedom. Remember the people who fought and died all the way from 1776 till present day. And remember, freedom wasn't free. And it's still worth everything today. So I wish you all a happy Independence Day. God bless America, the land of the free, because of the brave. And I want to close this segment with a quote from President John F. Kennedy. Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. All right, so let's get into the wrestling talk now. As passionate as I am about Independence Day, and I hope you guys have a great Independence Day, right? Remember what we are actually celebrating on the 4th of July. This episode is solely going to be my reactions from Night of Champions. And we'll talk about some questions from the Discord. We have an opening and final thought. This will be the only episode of the week, as I previously have mentioned. So with that, let's dive in to our opening thought. And that opening thought is, on Monday, I believe, they announced officially that Survivor Series in San Diego will officially be War Games. And I personally not the biggest fan of this decision, right? I'm just not the biggest fan of this, right? And so again, WWE is running Survivor Series as a War Games event this year. And see, I'm not anti-War Games. I love that spectacle, the chaos and the brutality. When it's done right, it's one of the most intense and satisfying gimmick matches in all of wrestling history. But here's the thing. And it's something that I really wish Triple H and WWE Creative would understand before they completely water this thing down. War Games is supposed to mean something. You can't just slap the name on a premium live event and call it long-term storytelling. You don't force a bunch of half-baked faction feuds into two rings, surround it with a steel cage, hoping that the visual spectacle makes up for the creative laziness. And that's what this is. Because Triple H knows that if he's booking every November for War Games, so he's going to lazily book this, right? Because what's happening now feels like we're backwards engineering stories to justify the match, not allowing the match to grow organically out of the story, and that's where the problem lies. See, when Triple H brought War Games to NXT and to eventually to the main roster, a lot of people were hyped, right? Myself included. It felt like a good evolution to the Survivor Series event. Maybe to put a fresh coat of paint on a PLE that was often neglected, not right. And the first couple of years, there was novelty. There was some heat. There was some chaos, right? But now we're doing it every single year, and you can feel it, that the mystique is fading, right? Part of what made War Games special in the past was its rarity. It was used when blood feuds escalated to the point of no return. When factions were at war, War Games was the payoff. This was the final match of the feud. It wasn't a plot device that you sort of inserted into random stories. See, but now War Games has become a calendar obligation. You're not building to War Games. You're building around War Games. You're forcing wrestlers into teams just to fill the cage. We're telling stories in reverse, hoping that the sight of bodies crashing through tables and steals enough to distract us from the fact that there's no real reason for them to be there in the first place. And I get it. Triple H is old school. He loves, you know, the NWA style. He sees War Games as a marquee attraction. But you know what else? Even the old school knew not to overuse War Games. Dusty Rhodes didn't book War Games like it was some holiday special. Triple H is doing feels more like a creative crutch than a creative choice. Right? It's the illusion of stakes without doing the actual hard work in crafting the stakes. And that's not what War Games was built for. So here's my plea, right? If we're going to run War Games every year, earn it. Don't just do it because the calendar says November. Do it because there are rivalries that need to be caged, because there's hatred that can't be contained, and because it's the only way to end the war. Otherwise, you're burning out one of wrestling's best gimmick matches by putting it on autopilot. Right. But my other issue is my actual plea is, there's no reason for War Games to be run every year, because what made Survivor Series work in the past was the traditional elimination style matches, right? How you could run this is you ran that. That's the default for Survivor Series, and when necessary, if there was a big enough blood feud, the Survivor Series match then, when necessary, can escalate into War Games. Because War Games is being treated like it's a brand in and of itself. Right? It's the same thing that I talk about with Triple H every single time I talk about his booking is, you know, he books for the shock and awe, and everyone, and he understands, and this isn't just a Triple H issue, that what happens is the fans mark out. A lot of the fans, they see the cage, they see War Games, a lot of fans mark out over these gimmick matches. And maybe it's because the way I watch wrestling, where I'm fully indelved and I need the story, and why I'm not the biggest fan of them continually running War Games is that, you know, not every story requires it. And when you use it every year, when the story does require it, but it's already being used every single year, now it makes that feud feel less important, right? But my second thing is War Games shouldn't be, and I talk about my issue with gimmick pay-per-views, PLEs, right? Royal Rumble, Money in the Bank, Elimination Chamber, War Games, right? When you run a gimmick solely at, like, a PLE solely based on a gimmick, right? And so Royal Rumble works. I don't want them to remove that. But, like, the Elimination Chamber should be a match that could be used at any time during the year. But instead, we just have it bookmarked into February on the road to WrestleMania. And the match doesn't seem to mean much of anything, especially because that match used to be a match you would have to defend your title in. But now it's a match where you earn a title opportunity. If they went back to saying, you know, it's July, we have six men who are battling for the champ. You have the champion and five others who are battling. I think of something like the SmackDown roster, where you have Cena being the champion and you have guys like Orton and McIntyre and Jacob Fatu and Damian Priest, and even an LA Knight, who are main event, you know, world champion caliber performers, but because Cena's the champion, right? But why, like imagine randomly at a SummerSlam, Nick Aldis being allowed to say, "Hey, we got six men here who think they should be champion. Why don't we settle this in Elimination Chamber?" But instead, we have it locked in. Elimination Chamber can only be used, right? Or think about having, you know, some sort of being able to book a blood feud where you, the only opportunity for you to use War Games isn't just in November, but at WrestleMania. Imagine having a War Games match at WrestleMania and you building up like two actual factions that have actual blood heat. Like, think of the two bloodlines now, Jacob Fatu versus Solo, which I think has a lot more, you know, if you think of last year's War Games match, right? And you had the battle of the bloodlines, right? With Roman and Jay and Jimmy, and was it Sammy or Cody? One of the two, I don't remember. Oh, no, CM Punk. It was CM Punk. My apologies. That whole feud started because of that, right? But so CM Punk, you know, Roman, Jimmy J, right? Versus, what is it, Jacob, and then Sammy, right? Sammy was the fifth man, right? Because they had five guys last year, which was weird because typically War Games only has four. Anyway, we're not going to talk about all this. But because then you had Bronson, Solo, Jacob, and the Tongans, right? And so imagine actually built, because that feud really only, first off, no one gave a shit about it until Roman came back to build towards War Games. But there was no build to it. But imagine they held off on that. And you build, you wait further out, you have Jacob turn on Solo. You don't have to insert Punk. You don't have to insert Roman. But the focus is on Solo and Jacob. And JC Mateo gets added. And now Hikaleo is added. And we'll talk about, you know, all of that here in a minute. And now we're building an actual blood feud. Because this side of the feud is a lot more entertaining than, well, Roman comes back after getting turned on because he disappeared after losing the title, and like, a Solo was, Solo's not the bad guy in that situation, in my opinion. That's just me, right? Obviously, they're playing Solo as the bad guy here, and because he is, right? And this works better, right? But imagine we build that feud out a little bit longer in a, like a SummerSlam. Oh, we're gonna put this in War Games, rather than saying, well, War Games can only happen in November, and we're going to book two War Games, but we have to build like a super team. Like 2 years ago, wasn't it, where it was the super team, the super friends, Cody and Jay and Sammy versus the bloodline, right? And so I don't want War Games used every single year, because first off, the more you do something, the less it means. The less meaning it has. The gimmick sort of lost its aura because you continue to do it. But secondly, not every feud requires War Games, right? You could run 5-on-5 typical elimination style Survivor Series matches, and then when the feud actually requires War Games, then you can do it in War Games, right? So that's my thought, right? I don't hate War Games. I'm not disappointed in like them running the gimmick. I'm not one of those guys that go, well, that's a WCW thing. No, I don't care about all that. What I care about is storytelling, and I don't feel like the last couple of War Games matches, and I don't even think there's anything that they're building to right now that's even worth running a War Games style match. That's just my opinion. So let's transition into Night of Champions. So the first thing, before we break into any of the actual matches, right, I want to talk about the crowd. And I'm not a crowd person. I typically don't care about the crowd. I don't care if they're loud. I don't care if they're, you know, over excessive. You know, sometimes I care that they're over excessive with the, especially when they're overseas, because I think overseas crowds are highly overrated. They're not chanting for the show. They're just chanting for the sake of chanting, right? To keep themselves entertained, which often means the product's not good. But anyway, I want to talk about the crowd and the reason of every time they go overseas, for whatever reason, fan favorites in America like Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill get absolutely no reaction, or they get booed out of the arena. And I don't understand why that is. I don't. Right? You're building towards WrestleMania in February, right? And you go overseas and you do this foreign tour so that Cena can participate. And every time Bianca's on the screen, she's supposed to be the baby face and she's getting booed out of the arena, right? But now we go back and Jade's winning the Queen of the Ring, and anyone that was smart when they saw the bracket should have figured Jade was winning this thing, right? But she gets zero reaction, and she even gets booed over the weekend. Naomi got booed as well. And I just have a genuine question. Why is that? If you're listening from overseas, leave a comment. I really want to know what it is, right? Because a lot of people are going to say, well, it's racism. I'm not that type of person who wants to put that accusation out into the universe, because I don't know. Now, I've done some research. The Arabic people tend to treat African descended people a little bit of hostility. That is a cultural thing. That's been a cultural thing for 3,000 plus years. Even, you know, in like biblical times, the darker your skin, the worse you got treated, more so from a socioeconomic standpoint. If you worked outside, you were tanner, you were darker skinned, typically it meant you were poor and you were a field worker, right? And so it's, maybe it's a cultural thing. I don't know. I'm not the type of person that wants to immediately jump to the accusation of, well, they booed Jay Cargill because of racism. I don't know. That could be the possibility. Right. But it's not just Saudi Arabia. It's everywhere overseas. And so I genuinely have the question, why is this that way? Cause it makes no sense. Cause Jade will come back to the States and get absolutely cheered and get reaction. Like, if she won Queen of the Ring in the United States, there would have been a loud reaction for her to win, right? So that's my first thing. But let's actually talk about the show. And it went exactly pretty much how I expected it to go, right? Nothing flashy, nothing, no fanfare. It went exactly the way I thought we would go. We start with Randy Orton and Cody Rhodes. I thought this was a fantastic just match in and of itself. Even all the way up until the ending where Randy could have punted Cody, but he didn't, because Cody's his friend and he didn't want to use an illegal move on a friend. He was okay trying to do it on Kevin Owens because Kevin Owens was an enemy, but Cody Rhodes is a friend, right? And so I just love how we taught that Randy Orton ran as the baby face in that match, which was not the way I expected it to go. And we'll talk more about Cody here in a minute. At the very end, because I have a prediction that I think is going to happen with Cody Rhodes here winning this. So Cody Rhodes is going to go. You know, he wins this match, really good match. He's going to SummerSlam to obviously face John Cena, and we'll talk about where I think that's going at the end of this prediction segment. We move in Rhea Ripley, Raquel Rodriguez, in a street fight. And we got to talk about this. First off, I told you Rhea Ripley was not losing. Rhea Ripley is Triple H's Mercedes Moné, right? The way Tony Khan treats Mercedes Moné is how Triple H treats Rhea Ripley. She either wins the match or she's placed in a triple threat where if she doesn't win, she's at least not taking the pin and she looks very strong in the match. Think WrestleMania. Right? Think WrestleMania. And so, again, I can stress, and I think this is, yeah, that's going to be the final thought. So we'll talk about Rhea a little bit later in the show, my actual thoughts on her, because there's a conversation that was being had in the Discord about it. But I told you Rhea wasn't losing. But my main thing is, like, what are we doing running a street fight and for this match? Again, why, like, and I know this is something petty to critique, but nothing in that match screamed a street fight. What, they grabbed a table and jumped off the table? I just, like, if we're going to call it a street fight, I don't see why you couldn't have it at least go backstage. Because in right, every street fight WWE ever holds, they end in the ring. But street fight rules literally are, it can end anywhere practically on the planet. It doesn't have to end in the ring. Why do we focus 90% of the action in street fights in the ring? Take it backstage, throw someone off a fucking bus, you know, do something that would actually get a pop in one of these matches, right? But my other question is, why couldn't Raquel win this? Why Raquel needed this win more than Rhea Ripley did? I don't understand the booking, especially if you're booking Roxanne to take Liv Morgan's spot. The Roxanne run-in would have, like, if Roxanne ran in to help Raquel win this match, it would have been a more natural progression to be like Raquel being like, yeah, I want her in the team. She's right. I know they got there eventually on Monday, but it would have been a more natural, actual human reaction rather than trying to scheme and plot and ask Adam Pearce and do all of that stuff, right? So I wasn't necessarily the biggest fan of this match, primarily because I knew it was going to be the match I cared the least about anyway. But yeah, I didn't like the stipulation. I didn't understand why it needed to be a street fight. I mean, all they did was cost each other their qualifier matches. Like, that dictates a street fight. That's another thing, like I talked about with War Games. It's like, street fight as a gimmick has to be in a feud that requires a street fight for it to make any sense. And then you don't even have it be a street fight. You just call it no holds barred. Call it a no DQ match. Right? Because that's all it was. It had to be a street fight so Roxanne can get involved. But then Roxanne's involvement meant absolutely nothing because it didn't help Raquel win. So it means absolutely nothing. All right, now we move to Sami Zayn taking on Karrion Kross. Imagine which Kara absolutely loved the results of. Shout out to Kara in the Discord. Sami Zayn defeats Karrion Kross with the Helluva kick. And again, the question is, again, I didn't hate the match. I thought the match was fine. I don't like the result. Here's why I don't like the result, right? A lot of people didn't like the result because Sami Zayn won, which, again, should have been very obvious. To the point to where I know I picked Kross on the show last Tuesday, but Saturday morning I changed it on the official predictions page that we're running that prediction competition, right? That Cody from Beyond the Junkyard's absolutely running away with. He's at 81% correct so far since we've been starting it. But absolutely running away with the competition there is Cody. But I changed my prediction from Cross to Sammy that morning before it started, because I woke up that, and I'm like, there's no way Sami Zayn is losing this, right? Because I was booking, I made that prediction based on how I would book it, which is my number one point. Like, why have Sammy win this match though? Because there's a much bigger story that could have been told. This result absolutely kills any story between Sammy and Karrion Kross, right? That was the point. This was supposed to end the feud anyway. But there's a bigger feud. There's a bigger story that you could have here. And that story is Sami Zayn in June of 2025 loses in Saudi Arabia in front of his hometown crowd to Karrion Kross. And now Sami Zayn has to deal with that. And he's at rock bottom. This is the event that shakes him to his core. You could start a series of progression of Sami Zayn just diving into he's losing. You could start like a losing streak with Sami Zayn where he's just absolutely getting obliterated every single match he's in. And the fans start to feel for him. That way, when you turn the corner into January of 2026 and you're back in Saudi Arabia, and you got Sami Zayn in the Royal Rumble, I would even have him start at number one. And he's second guessing himself, and he doesn't know if he can do this. He hasn't won a match in 6 months. And Sami Zayn then wins the Royal Rumble in Saudi Arabia, that, right? Gets to go face Seth Rollins at WrestleMania, because I'm assuming by that point Seth Rollins would have cashed in and become champion. And you have the big story arc of Sami Zayn overcoming what Seth Rollins said he couldn't overcome in being world champion. He's overcoming the losing streak, which was, right, he overcomes this, he overcomes that, he eliminates Kross in the Rumble, which ends that feud for good, right? And he's just overcoming all these obstacles. He wins the Royal Rumble. That's a better story than, well, Sami Zayn has to win because he's Saudi, or because he's Muslim. He's not Saudi, he's Syrian. But Sami Zayn has to win because he's the token Muslim on the roster now, because Ali is gone and Mansoor is gone. So now you got to push, right? And what's funny is that this is only happening because Saudi and Syria are on good terms right now. Like, if we can get geopolitical, but if relations with Syria go down like they've historically have been, Sammy's not even going to be allowed in the country. I don't understand the sort of token. He's the token Muslim. He's the guy that's going to, like, it's sort of like Jey Uso to me, right? Sure, Jey Uso represents the new generation. He can get the kids. But if you're going to book solely and book him at the top solely because of that, I think you're not telling stories at that point. You're not telling stories with Sami Zayn. You're just giving him wins because, right, Sami Zayn, I said this in the Discord, Sami Zayn has become to Saudi Arabia what Vince McMahon tried to make Jinder Mahal in India. Just the token representative of that culture, right? I think Sami Zayn should have lost this match. That's where I'm upset, right? And I know there's a lot of people, so let's transition to my second thought about this match, right? There's a lot of people complaining about, oh, well, Sami Zayn, you know, he gets the, he's out cold and he gets the three arm drops. But when Jey Uso lost the title to Gunther, he only got one and they called the match. Well, what was that thing you guys were yelling at me about in February, January of this year when Rhea Ripley gets a random ass title match again? Or not Rhea Ripley. Io Sky got a random ass title match because Rhea Ripley got involved, didn't even hit Io, but got involved and cost her qualifier into Elimination Chamber. So Io had to face Rhea for a title match. And what was it? Oh, it was something you guys were saying. Well, oh, it's the ref's discretion. Now, I don't agree with it. I 100% agree that there's zero consistency among referees. But what was that thing you guys have been yelling at me for like the last 6 months of this thing of like ref discretion, and that some people are allowed to attack people on the outside of the ring, but if other people do, then you get random title matches. That, right? Oh, it's ref's discretion to end them, right? And that's exactly what this was. Ref Daphne was a little bit more discretionary, understanding the match and what it is, and she did the three and not the one. Does it make sense? Absolutely not. But I don't want to hear you guys complaining about it when you guys were yelling at me for complaining about Rhea Ripley hitting Liv Morgan and somehow that allows Io Sky to get a title match. Or what made WrestleMania a triple threat when it should have been Io versus Bianca, but somehow, some way, Rhea gets involved and Bianca doesn't touch anybody, but there's a DQ or something like that happened, and you're like, oh, ref's discretion. Well, that's what this is. Y'all got to remain just right. Y'all got to remain consistent. At least you guys like ref discretion, except when Sami Zayn wins because of it. And again, I fully agree. It makes absolutely zero sense. There should be a consistency among the policy. Like, WWE should have a policy within their referees that, like, hey, this is how we're doing it. You either going to do the three hand drops, or if he's out, he's out. But if we're going to run the ref discretion angle, you got to keep that you got to stand on that every time it's used. Right? We move on to Solo versus Jacob. And look, I'm not upset at this. Solo Sikoa is the best member of the Bloodline. And I mean that in total, like including Roman Reigns, Jey Uso, Jimmy Uso, right? Roman was good because he demanded a certain respect. But that got tiring after a while. Roman was really good on the mic. Like, I'm not taking away from Roman, but Solo has a charisma that Roman doesn't have. Solo's funny. Solo is comedic, but also serious, and right. And I've been telling y'all, Solo was that dude for like 3 years since his NXT debut. That Solo was that dude. I'm not upset that Solo won the match. I'm a little bit caught off guard that they did it at Night of Champions. I figured they would have waited till SummerSlam. Waited till SummerSlam to make the title change. But I'm not upset. I predicted the match right. I just, in terms of who, how things would interfere, I just predicted them on the wrong side. I figure that Tama Tonga and Hikuleo, or it was actually Tongaloa that came back. But I figured the guys that would interfere in the match would interfere in against Solo and JC Mateo. But instead, they're joining. That seems to be the new Bloodline, and Jacob's going to need to find some support, which appears maybe Zilla. Now we have the question, is Tama Tonga going to join his brothers with Solo? Is he going to split and go with Jacob? There's a lot of questions you can ask here in this story. This story is interesting. It just sucks. It's on a show that is absolutely petrifyingly boring on Friday night. If they move that to Netflix, maybe I would be more interested in watching it. Jade Cargill versus Asuka. Jade won. I don't think this was hard to predict either. This was the right choice. Like I said on my prediction show last week, Asuka is easier to book in a title match if you want to have her face Io. It's so much easier for Asuka to get there losing the Queen of the Ring than having Jade lose and figuring out how to put her in a meaningful title feud, right? So now Jade wins. She gets the right to face Tiffany Stratton at SummerSlam, which is going to be fun, which sets up Naomi cashing in potentially, which sets up what's Bianca's role going to be in this feud. I can see a triple threat down the line at some point between the three. That again, it's another thing on SmackDown that if the rest of the show wasn't so boring, I would love to pay attention to, right? I miss watching Bianca. I don't have it in me to sit through 3 hours of SmackDown. But if the rumors are correct, we're jumping into 2-hour SmackDowns move going forward here soon. And because that's what USA Network put out. I may even be as early as this month that we're jumping into 2-hour SmackDowns. And if that's the case, I could sit through 2 hours of SmackDown. So I don't understand the hate for Jade Cargill. I don't understand it. I'm just being honest with you. In my point of view, the hate from Jade Cargill is coming from these wrestling nerds on the internet who think that every single match has to be a technical masterpiece. There's, you know, JD from NY. I love the dude sometimes, but he made a post on X during the show talking about how do you botch your own finisher pin, your finisher pin, talking about Jade sort of, she didn't do the pin part of Jade it correctly, but like it shouldn't be done technically sound every single time. I liked the way Jade did the pin where she sort of fell over to get the win, right? I don't think she has to do the, it's not 2K where every move is done the same way every single time you click the button. I think what makes wrestling fun is understanding that normal human reaction can still play a role in it, right? They're not, right? And so you want to try to make it as realistic. That was a hard fight. Jade hit Jaded out of nowhere and was tired and didn't get the pin correctly. Like I don't know. Like, and everyone's like, oh, well, Jade's still green. She doesn't have to be the most technically sound. And that's my problem, is a lot of these nerds who are critiquing her are judging her from the mindset that every match has to be a technical 5-star match. That Dave Meltzer would cream his pants over, and it doesn't. That's not realistic. Not every fight's going to be a technical masterpiece, especially when Jade's style is super, you know, she's the monster. She's the bigger, you know, power. It's a more power-based style, not a technical wrestling, fast-paced style. I think Jade has leaps and bounds better than the first day she stepped into WWE. 100%. I think she's leaps and bounds better. But here's the funny part, right? King and Queen of the Ring is all elite. Cody Rhodes, Jade Cargill. It's funny, right? I don't know if that was a little... I think they were the best two choices out of the tournament that we got. I still think that tournament should be used to promote the mid card, but I'm not upset with the results we got. So we're going to talk about John Cena versus CM Punk, and I don't have much to say about the match outside of while the ending chaos was fun, a lot of it was pointless. while it was fun, it was not necessarily good. I don't think it added to anything in any of the stories. Penta was completely meaningless. Like, why did Penta? He has very little to do with that match in and of itself. I get Cena's whole thing as I'm here to ruin wrestling. And I get Seth Rollins coming out to try to maybe cash in and or cost CM Punk a championship. But everything else that happened around that, I just don't think it added anything to any storyline. That's just me personally, right? So two final thoughts. So the first final thought here of this is I 100% expect to see a John Cena, Cody Rhodes double turn at SummerSlam. I think this match ends with Cody Rhodes selling out to The Rock. The Rock will show up, cost John Cena the title. Cody will win. He finally sold his soul. We can move on to putting that at edge. We could put that to end where Cody Rhodes did sell out. John Cena can go back and end the second half of his run as a babyface, possibly getting a match with The Rock as part of it. And he doesn't have to be champion. He can go on and put other people over in matches. He's got what, like 10, 15. By the time we get to the end of SummerSlam, he'll probably have like 10 appearances left. And so, yeah, I think a double cross or double turn is happening. I think Cody will become a heel. I think you saw parts of it where he was running heel tactics in the match against Randy. I think it's time to turn him heel. I know there are some of the more casual fans don't want Cody to go heel because he sells. You know, the people who think of the business analytically. Oh well, he sells too much merchandise for the kids. Okay, well, that's great and all, but he's boring as fuck, right? I hate that excuse. Oh, he sells too much merchandise for the kids. Our number one merch seller in WWE right now was Karrion Kross. I don't think people recognize that kids these days are a little bit more edgier, and it's fun to cheer for the bad guy. Right, I don't think everyone wants to cheer for Cody Rhodes. That's just right. But bad Cody is the best Cody. Like, heel Cody is what made the American Nightmare, especially with the nickname the American Nightmare. That's definitely a name that requires a heel gimmick, right? Because good guys aren't nightmares, right? Good guys aren't nightmares. But the final thing that I have to say about this PLE is this. We have to move the fuck on from CM Punk and Seth Rollins. It's 2 years now. Like we're literally approaching 2 years of this feud where no one's got the upper hand. And I know injury has been a part of it with Punk being hurt and Seth, you know, and all of that. And then we moved into Punk and Drew for a while. But Seth Rollins and CM Punk have essentially been at his... If you look at CM Punk's run since he's been back, Drew McIntyre and Seth Rollins have been really the only feuds he's been in. We have to do something. We got to move on from this. Because it's like, I can't take any more... Well, Seth Rollins is in a match, and so CM Punk's going to cost him a match. Put him in the damn ring and end the feud once and for all. Rollins costing Punk every time he gets a title match is not a story. Like, it's not a story that I want to continue to watch. I just don't. We got to move on from it. It's almost 2 years at this point. I'm okay with long-term storytelling if there was an actual story that needed to be told. This is just for the fuck of it, right? All right. So we're going to move on to bracket battles, which, as per usual, I did not prepare for. So let me pull up my brackets real quick. While I'm pulling these up, while I am pulling up the brackets, I'll go ahead and announce that we do have the next bracket battle decided. We're going to do best women's wrestler, and by that I mean overall women's wrestler. So taking into appearance, you know, appearance, taking into consideration appearance, in-ring ability, promo ability, stuff like that. And so let me pull these up and update the brackets, because you're going to watch me do this in real time. Hate to take your time and waste it, but we are into the final eight best themes, where we will do, we will have the final four. And then at the end of this, and I'm just going to walk you guys through how we're going to do that. So once we have the winners of today's final eight, and we lower it to the final four, how we're going to determine the final four and who wins is a just, I'm just going to put the final four in a vote, and whoever gets the most votes on that poll will be declared the winner. That will happen next. That'll happen next Friday. So I know I told you guys that I'm running this episode and then we're done. Yes and no, but I told you guys, expect for Evolution and Great American Bash and All In me to do a prediction show. And I have decided on the 11th, Friday the 11th, that will be audio only, by the way. It will be posted on YouTube as an audio format, no video. But moving forward after this episode, so take in, if you watch on YouTube, this is the last time you're going to see my mug, my face on the screen. Interesting. All right. So let's go and talk about our final eight here as we get into our final four. These are final four matchups. So the matchups that we have whatever Chris Benoit versus Kane Slow Chemical. That's going to be an interesting battle. We have I Walk Alone, Batista versus John Cena's Thugonomics. And then we have Cult of Personality versus Break the Walls Down. Cult of Personality being Punk versus Jericho's Break the Walls Down, and Randy Orton Voices versus Roman Reigns Head of the Table. So with that, we will have our final four. We'll do a final vote Friday the 11th. And then when I come back on in August, the first Tuesday in August that I record on, we will start the brand new bracket, which is best women. It's 64 women in these brackets, from TNA, from AEW, and from WWE. I'll be honest, it's 32 from WWE, and then the last 32 are split between TNA and AEW. I don't have an exact count for how many, but I think it's a fair representation of the women in wrestling. And so the brackets are in the Discord. If you want to join, you can take a look at them. And so with that, we'll jump into our questions from the Discord, and then we'll do our final thought and we'll get up out of here. Questions. First one. So all of these I do believe are from B-Master this week. Do you think John Cena buried the Nexus, or do you think the group was too green? So here's the thing. I wasn't watching during the time of the Nexus, so I don't fully have the context. But from everything that I have heard and seen, Cena definitely buried the Nexus. I even think Cena agrees he buried him. I don't really have much to say on this because I didn't watch it. I don't have any great insight. I think it was a burial. Probably something that shouldn't have been done because the Nexus was a really good group. I don't have a lot of context or insight on this question, to be honest with you. B-Master then adds, this is the question that I want to talk a little bit about this. I'm going to do this one last, the second one. But so he just recently asked a couple hours ago, do you have a favorite gimmick match? Which is a great question, considering that I absolutely despise gimmick matches. I do. I despise the way gimmick matches are used. If used properly, I think every gimmick match has its place. As with most everything, when it comes to wrestling, I don't have a favorite anything, right? I don't have a favorite match. I have matches that I like, but I don't have a favorite. Like, if you were to come and ask me what's your favorite match of all time, I don't have one. I could list a couple that maybe I enjoyed the most, right? Daniel Bryan winning the title at WrestleMania 30. I like that match. It wasn't the best match, but was one of the matches that first got me into wrestling as I started watching older wrestling. Eddie versus Rey Mysterio, Halloween Havoc 97. Probably the closest thing to, if I had to choose a favorite match, that probably would be it. But I'm not 100% certain because there's always matches that happen that I'm like, oh, I like that a lot. And then, right. And so I don't ever say I have a favorite. Do you have a favorite? Right. I remember at work, we swapped like managers, like district managers. And so I had a new district manager. And so she came around and started like getting to introduce herself and meeting the people in her district. And as she was introduced, she was like, hey, what do you like to do outside of work? And I'm like, oh, mainly just watch pro wrestling and stuff like that. Right. Is, oh, who's your favorite wrestler? Which is always the question people ask. And I'm like, I don't really have one. And my explanation is I don't watch wrestling in the way most people watch wrestling. I watch it as it's a TV show. It's here to entertain me. If you do your job, I like you. Now, I have a list of people that I like over other people, like for women, Lyra, Stephanie, Becky, Bianca. Fuck, Kara's going to record that one. Lyra, Stephanie, Vaquer, and Bianca Belair, Sol Ruka, Julia, probably my top five of women that I like. If you go to the men's side, Solo Sikoa, Jacob Fatu, Oba Femi, Jasper Troy has been becoming a new favorite of mine. That dude's a beast, and he's just been in the business, right? So I don't want to hear about all the PC can't do anything. Look at what they've done with Jasper Troy, big dog. Anyway, I don't have a favorite anything in wrestling. I just don't. I like certain gimmick matches. Like, I like War Games. Like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I think it's one of the most unique gimmicks, but when you overuse it and you don't use it properly, it becomes a little bit stale. Elimination Chamber, if it went back to original Elimination Chamber where you defended the title and it actually, like, you bled and it was a physical match and it wasn't who could do the most the craziest high spot, but someone's getting absolutely brutally murdered in this match, we're going to drag them across the cage and there's going to be blood, like, that's fun, right? I wish we could go back to that. I think a good Hell in a Cell match is, again, when used properly, is good. I like street fights. If used the way that street fights should be done, go backstage, go out into the parking lot. I'm not, the way WWE does gimmick matches, nothing feels important. So I don't really have a favorite in that way, right? And then the last question, if AEW doesn't care about storytelling, as we are told often by members of their fan base, that storytelling isn't important, then why do they have so many people on their roster that aren't being utilized? The question being, essentially the point of this question is, if storytelling is not important to AEW in the way that they don't necessarily care about the story, we're just going to put two random people together in matches and have banger matches, then why is the roster not being utilized in that fashion? And it does bring up a good point, because the argument that was being made, so James, being the AEW dick writer, just for lack of better terms, having to defend it, said, well, who said storytelling doesn't matter? Well, you have several times that storytelling is not the major point of watching AEW and that they're not trying to tell stories. And then we got into this argument about storytelling in the ring and the Japanese style and this, that, and third. And you can go read all of that in the Discord. My answer to this is actually pretty simple. I don't think Tony Khan knows what he's doing, first off. But I think he does actually care about storytelling. He's just not good at it. Right, there's a lot of people who want to tell stories. They're just very bad at telling stories. And I don't think he knows what he's doing. I think they actually do care about stories. The more I watch current day product AEW, they definitely are trying to tell stories. And so some of the examples that B-Master brought up was like Keith Lee. Now, I don't know ultimately what Keith Lee's issue is. I think he has some health problem that keeps him from being in ring, but I don't know. I also think he's disgruntled and they don't want to use him. It is what it is. I think it's another Penta Phoenix situation. I don't know. I think Tony Khan wants to tell stories. He's just not good at doing it. That's what I think. That's my simple answer. I could be wrong though. Who knows? Yeah, so let's move into our final thought. The final thought of this podcast for a month, because we're going to do an episode in about 9 days, Friday the 11th. But that's strictly, we got 3 shows to talk about. I'm just doing predictions. And so this will be the final thought until August. And that is, why is Rhea Ripley in the title picture? Again, this isn't me saying Rhea Ripley is bad. I actually like Rhea Ripley. The problem is just like with War Games, Rhea Ripley is being highly overused. I've done this rant before. I don't think I should have to do it again, but I will. She's overused. She's her and Liv Morgan. I joked when Liv got hurt that this was a good thing, because that means Liv Morgan doesn't have to be on my TV anymore and that we can get a break. Listen to how you could have booked. This is how I would have booked Night of Champions. I would have had Raquel go over strong as shit in a way that would have written Rhea off of TV. Right? Raquel and Roxanne are standing strong in the middle of the ring. Rhea could be like stretchered out or needing help to get out of the arena. We don't see Rhea for like 6 months. I'm not saying Rhea needs to be jobbed out. I'm not saying Rhea needs to disappear for like a year. We just need about 6 months to cleanse the palate of Rhea Ripley. Change up how she looks. If she's going to be a babyface, she has to play the part of a babyface. Even like she comes all out in the all black and the gothic look. And I'm sorry, Vince McMahon was right by trying to make her a heel. That look is the the definition of a heel, right? I'm not saying all golf people are evil, but that's the stereotype. And so you either have to make her a heel when she comes back, or you bring her back as a babyface that looks the part of a babyface. New music, new look, new style. And which is why I think it's just easier to make her a heel and keep her as a heel. Because then you don't have to change all of that. But she comes back in 6 months at the Rumble, fully refreshed. We don't worry about her. You know, she's not in title pictures. She can come out and win the Rumble for all I give a fuck. I just want the bigger issue, though, is there's the reason they won't do that is twofold. They're in a debt, so they're going to use the big names that sell tickets, which is fine. But secondly, there's no one else on the roster, which is insane because there are people on the roster. Like, I think Stephanie Vaquer can hold that spot down perfectly fine. The baby face that everyone's enthralled with because she's got an ass. Right? Like, I get why people like Vaquer. Like, I like Stephanie Vaquer for not just that, but I think she's a really good wrestler in the ring. But Stephanie Vaquer can hold that place on the roster down when Rhea, just get Rhea 6 months off of TV. Build up newer wrestlers. Like, right? Bianca Belair could shift over and take that spot. A Stephanie Vaquer. You could call up Jordynne Grace. You can call up Sol Ruka. You can call up Zarya, even. And I feel that they could take that role and actually like take that ball and run with it. But they're not going to trust anyone else because they know Rhea is a certified ticket seller. I also think, aren't they going to Australia in October? So Rhea's not going anywhere. In fact, if anything, Rhea's probably going to win the fucking title. I don't know how I feel about all that. But, yeah, that's my final thought. I'm just tired of Rhea. I don't hate Rhea Ripley. I don't think she's a bad character. I think the character needs some adjustments. I think it's stale. I just think there's a Rhea Ripley fatigue that a lot of fans are experiencing, but you can't say it because it's Rhea Ripley and people will jump to defend her. Like, it's crazy, right? My last final thought, just something that I thought about. They caught Liv Morgan's stalker. He's in jail or he's on trial. I hope they send him through the fucking floor of the prison because this dude's absolutely insane. But anyway, that's just my final thought. I hope you guys enjoyed the episode. Let me know what you think. Like, share, subscribe. We are going to take a bit of a break from the podcast in the month of July. One more episode, like I said, that'll be next Friday on the 11th. And then we're taking the rest of the month off until August 1st when we predict SummerSlam. So with that, I appreciate you guys being here. It is a Wednesday that I'm recording this, AEW Dynamite 300. If you care about it, that's tonight. If you give a fuck, that's a whole other debate. Maybe we'll talk about that at a later time. With that, I'm Way Too Deep. This is the Slap of Me Wrestling Podcast. If you watch on YouTube, just a reminder, going forward, every episode after this, there will be a YouTube video posted, but it will strictly just be audio, no video. And so with that, thank you all. Have a great rest of your day. And I will see you on the 11th in audio form. And so have a great week. Have a great Independence Day weekend. Stay smart. There's someone around the world right now who doesn't recognize it. This will be the last weekend that they have all 10 fingers because someone's always going to be stupid and blow their hands off. Anyway, be safe. Have a great Independence Day weekend, and I'll see you on the next episode. So hit that subscribe, come along for the ride. AEW, WWE, we're always on side. From fantasy booking to baddies that slay, slapping me wrestling every-
every Tuesday.